So it's my great pleasure to welcome back in 2010 the illustrious Dave Rico. Illustrious and prolific Dave Rico, because he has yet another new book that we are going to hear about tonight, Being True to Life. Here's a copy of it right here, thank you. Poetic Paths to Personal Growth. Now, those of you who've been to some of the events that where Dave has read and spoken before about his other books know that he has a great love of poetry and an enormous facility for reciting poetry from heart with great conviction and elegance. So it does not surprise me that he has decided to incorporate poetry into his psychological practices, and that is the subject, as I understand it, of this book tonight. So welcome back, Dave.
Thank you, Rob.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you all. So, how many people in here have ever written a poem? Good. Just about everybody. And my belief is that anyone who can write a poem. And it's just a matter of going into the part of yourself that has the most freedom. It's freedom from rules of syntax and grammar. It's freedom to work with images that have come from within yourself. It's freedom to be obscene, pornographic, outrageous. It's freedom to open to what seems to be coming through you, either in your conscious life or in dreams. In fact, you could say that when you have a dream and you tell about it, that in itself is a poem, because it contains images that don't quite seem to go together, and it's said in a kind of rhythmic or broken way. So we're really composing poems a lot. It's just that we don't write them down or think of them in this more conscious way. The point of my book is that we can start to work on ourselves, find out more about ourselves, even work through some issues that are plaguing us, and at the same time grow spiritually through reading and writing poetry. And I give very specific examples and exercises that show you how to do this. And I loved writing this book because this is one of my special loves and always has been. And it was just a joy to write this. And some of that comes through when you read it. So I'm happy that I did this, and I'm glad to be able to share a little bit with you. I'm just going to read a paragraph or two, and then we'll go on. Something kept itself alive after grammar school. It is the poet within. She lives in utter liberty of imagination, shorn of the restrictive mindsets of being correct. This is how we find the center of our own soul, and we become abundantly who we really are. And these lines of Walt Whitman express it well. To have the gag removed from one's mouth, to have the feeling today or any day that I am sufficient as I am. And that goes together, that when you remove the gag, when you no longer have to say something a certain way, but you can say it in whatever way it comes through, that becomes the equivalent of feeling as if it's okay to be you. And this is not like our experience in school, where they sometimes made us feel stupid because they were trying to get us to analyze poems rather than feel them and appreciate them. I heard recently that Helen Keller, who couldn't see, hear, or speak, once said that she could feel moonlight. So she was able to have an experience of what to everybody else is an image in the sky and something visible. She was able to have that experience without having to use the ordinary senses. And even the way she expresses it is a poem in itself. I can feel moonlight. So what's in this book is an invitation to try your hand at writing poetry and open your mind to reading it in a new way. And you will discover yet another inspiring and surprising path to psychological growth and spiritual practice. Most encouraging of all, you will be set free from what may be a stunted imagination, and you will watch breathlessly as your soul opens into a sky. By stunted imagination, I mean that as a result of how we were taught in school and especially in religion, we came to believe that the world is constructed in a certain way, and it's up to us to understand how it was constructed and to believe what we were being told that this construction was about and what it was for. Now, when you take your unique stand as an individual and put all that aside long enough to ask yourself, what do I believe and how do I see the world? Not from the second-hand point of view, not with what I inherited or what I was taught, but what does it look like to me personally? And when you start putting that into words, that's the equivalent of a poem, because it brings originality into your experience. And this is one of the worst results of the kind of education that involves a lot of memorizing, for instance, and a lot of analyzing, because your imagination gets smaller and smaller since it's not allowed to stretch out into its fullness. What is the size of this fullness? About the size of the sky. And every single person in here has this wonderful possibility. So I'd like to begin, I'm just beginning my talk by talking about that angle, that we have an imagination and it's okay to open it. And it's okay to let it come through. And imagination, of course, comes from the word image. Two kinds of images. We have the images that are pictures of our personal life. For instance, right now, form a picture in your mind of what the kitchen looked like in your childhood. So you can picture your own personal image that's connected to you and your family history. And I can picture my kitchen also. And every single person in here has a different picture. In addition to our storehouse of personal images, which relate to, let's say, our family album and our history, our personal history, our story. In addition to that, we have inherited a wonderful treasury of universal images, like the rainbow, the sun, the moon, the sky, that also is in us, and these universal images are metaphors, are descriptions, comparisons to what our life is about at a bigger level than what's in the kitchen of our home. So let's say you were to think of the moon and the stars and the sun, and that somehow these are not just heavenly bodies, but they are pictures of features of yourself. That there's a part of you that's like the sun, very clear about things. And there's another part of you that's like the moon, that gives a kind of half-life light, and you can't quite see perfectly what's going on, but yet it has a softness to it, and it has an ambiguity that you appreciate, which doesn't happen in full sunlight. So now the sun and the moon are not just the sun and the moon. They tell us something about the way we see and the way we look at the world and the way we are in the depths of our own self. Because sometimes we're very clear and sometimes we're ambiguous, and it's okay to be both. Everybody follow? So I'm hoping that by reading this, by reading what's in this book, you will find this permission to look at the world and yourself in a little different way from the way you ordinarily do. Now let's go back to the picture of you in the kitchen. Because one of the exercises I have in here is for you to picture yourself in the kitchen of your childhood with your whole family sitting around the table. And this may be unusual for you, it certainly is for me. They are actually looking at you and paying attention to you. And they're actually going to listen. So everybody's going to be silent, and you're going to get your chance to say what you want to say. And you go from person to person, and you express your appreciation for what that person meant to you in your growing up, and any resentments that you have, because both are legitimate. And if you start putting this into writing, so I'm going to write this out as I go through this exercise, that becomes a poem. It becomes a poem because instead of being written out in paragraphs, it'll just have little phrases, little things that you notice about yourself and about the other people who are sitting around the table. This is the wonderful possibility that writing offers, and poetic writing especially, since we don't have to follow the ordinary rules of grammar. We can just write it any old way, and then we can work on it later if we want to. In fact, another thing I suggest is that when something important happens and you're writing it in your journal, instead of writing it out in paragraph form, write it out in short lines as if it were a poem and try to bring some rhythm to it. Because there's something healing about the rhythm that you will automatically put into the expressions that you use. As soon as you say to yourself, I'm going to write this as a poem, you automatically access that right side of the brain that works with images. And that was the problem in grammar school. They never taught us how to go to that other side. They just wanted us to analyze using the same brain that was memorizing the times tables they were trying to get us to use that to work on a poem. That won't work because it doesn't come from that part of us. Everybody follow? Mm-hmm. But anyway, I don't want to go too far off before I check in with you. Questions about any of this so far? Everybody kind of following the idea? And it has tremendous excitement in it once you let yourself go in this way. What way? To express something that's in you and continually open yourself to the symbols that are real to all of us. Any questions? So let's take this poem by... Oh, yes.
Have you ever tried writing with your left hand? Because I think that access is the
yes,
right
way. That's another way to access your unconscious.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to find when you sit to write a poem that you will usually come up with new information that you did not have when you started out. Why is that happening? Because you're cluing into something from the unconscious, which is rising up into consciousness as you work artistically. Work artistically, paying attention to the images and the feelings rather than the proper way to say something. Proper way to say something? No imagination. Saying it in whatever way comes to you, imaginative. Yeah?
So I keep hearing the way you're talking about writing poetry. I mean, you sort of said it explicitly, but it's really striking me how it's another way to access the dream life, the unconscious. And
yes.
To bring up new material by opening up to that. Like
yes.
Have a conversation with that
writer. Right. One of the things I talk about in the book is how to work with dreams with poetry, because Jung has a phrase and practice called active imagination. What is this? He says, when you wake up in the morning and you remember a certain dream and you write it out, take the part of the various characters in the dream and write out what each of the characters would say to one another. And in this way, you're continuing the dream from your unconscious life into your conscious life. He calls it dreaming the dream onwards. And when you write it out in this way, it's automatically a poem. Because you're definitely working with what came from the unconscious. Unconscious. That which was somehow disavowed or repressed because it was unacceptable to be shown in ordinary daily life. And I'm sure you realize that we do that. We hide things about ourselves that are deeper truths than what's on our driver's license. So the deeper truth about your identity, let's say, will come out in a dream, and that dream can become a poem. Other questions about this? Yeah.
I like looking at the relationship between our creativity or natural creativity and our vulnerability. And it's like when we're sleeping is when we're in a vulnerable state. And it seems that when we're there is when our dreams seem to naturally surface. So it's interesting just to look at the relationship between the vulnerability that we're able to venture in the moment and our creativity.
Yes, that's a very good point. He's saying that when you really show what's inside you, it takes some vulnerability because you'd have to find somebody to trust who's willing to read your poem without making fun of you or saying you're crazy or turning against you. So you're going to have to be careful about whom you read your poem to. This is how you know whom you can trust. It's the person you can show your vulnerability to. I have a chapter in here about working with specifics, which we don't have time to go into now, but it's Life's Emotional Challenges. This is chapter 5. How to work with poetry when you feel fear, loneliness, depression, addiction, childhood trauma, or relationship concerns. This is a surprising tool that can really help you. Because when you work with your fears, not just by trying to get away from them or fix them, instead you go into the fear and you go into it imaginatively, see what images come up, and work with them and live with them, then something happens to you and your fear. And everything about you becomes more accessible. And this beautiful quotation by Anne Frank, which I found in her diary, really fits the bill. I am grateful to God for giving me this gift, the gift of writing. I'm grateful to God for giving me this gift, this possibility of developing myself and of writing, of expressing all that is in me. I can shake off everything if I write. My sorrows disappear and my courage is reborn. So she noticed when she was sitting there writing, even though she was in such terrible straits, that in those moments she was free of fear. Because there's something courageous about being willing to even put yourself out there on paper, let alone tell somebody. So I have here, most of us have not taken advantage of the comfort, help, and healing that comes so naturally from writing a poem when we face challenges. You know, we just never thought of it that way. But I found this over and over again. If I really am confused about something, and I don't know what decision to make or how to handle something, if I sit down and write a poem, not that I'm going to show to anybody, just for my own purpose of exploring, I definitely come up with something that helps me. Have other people had this experience? I mean, it's really worth trying. So this poem by, this is a sonnet, which is a poem in 14 lines. And this is by William Butler Yeats. He was in love with a woman named Maud Gunn, who continually rejected him. And this led to him writing many poems about his rejected love. And so she became a kind of muse, like she was the inspiration of some of his greatest poems, of which this is one. And in this poem, you will notice the wonderful vulnerability that he expresses. When you are old and gray and full of sleep and nodding by the fire, take down this book and slowly read of the soft look your eyes had once and of their sorrows deep. How many loved your moments of glad grace and loved your beauty with a love false or true. But one man loved the pilgrim soul in you and loved the sorrows of your changing face. And bending down beside the glowing bars, murmur a little sadly how love fled, and paced upon the mountains overhead, and hid his face amid a crowd of stars. So you can do the equivalent of that. Because, of course, you'll be expressing in your own unique voice. Anyway, in this poem, he is grieving. He's mourning the loss of a possible relationship that never materialized. But he's doing it in a way that seems to bring about a certain ultimate composure. Seems like the poem is helping him do some of the grieving that has to happen in a bigger way than just an occasional boo-hoo. And he's using the skills that he was given, which far exceed those that we were given, most likely. And he's sharing with us what it sounds like when you go to the deepest place inside where the tears are expressed in words. And something happens by the end of the poem that alerts him and her to the real loss that's occurred from his point of view. And that phrase, the pilgrim soul in you, that I'm the one who noticed that, you know, you were on a journey, that you were searching, and I was there for you in that. At least I came through in that way. It has no resentment in it. I'm still here for you, even though the love that I have isn't showing itself in the way I want. Instead, it's somewhere in the mountains and the stars. Once he brings that in those last lines, that paced upon the mountains overhead, as if the love now were some type of traveler who's pacing back and forth up in the mountains, paced upon the mountains overhead and hid his face amid a crowd of stars. That this love wound up being hidden. Where? Up in the stars. And by using the word stars, of course, we have the reference to astrology, a subtle way of saying it was not in the stars for it to happen. It was not fated for it to happen. Just in that very last word of the poem, he brings that element in. So I'm sharing that just so you could get an example of how some poets have used their poems to work out some of their personal stuff. Does anybody in here have any personal stuff that she needs to work out? Most of us do. So this is yet another way to do that. Questions? Other questions that come up or comments? Yes.
It seems If I write, I tend to write more prose, and it seems more analytical because I'm writing from that thinking part of myself.
Yes.
So what I'm getting is that when you're writing from poetry, if you're using poetry as the style, then that allows for things to come up that you're not. I mean, you've talked about the unconscious, so I mean, I'm just getting the distinction because I do write, but I don't do poetry typically if I'm working something out.
Mm-hmm. Well, just try it and see what happens. Like, mm-hmm. if you just say to yourself, okay, I'm going to put this in the form of a poem, and you just write in that way, mm-hmm. you'll notice yourself accessing some other dimension of yourself mm-hmm. that goes way beyond paragraph writing. Mm-hmm. For one thing, in paragraph writing, everything has to be in correct English and correct grammar. Mm-hmm. So already you're in that box. Not that there's anything wrong with it, but it doesn't give us the chance to visit this other side. Mm-hmm. So this would be the other side of ourselves, the side that has a lot more freedom. Ultimately, that's what poetry is. So, a free way of expressing something. All the arts have to use something physical. So a painting has to use paint and a canvas. A statue has to use marble. Music has to use notation, and the instruments have to be constructed in a certain way. Poetry has to use words. So somehow this is a combination. Art, any artistic experience, combines the ordinary palpable reality, such as a block of marble, mm-hmm. with your personal artistic skill. And so that's why poems use words, but they use them differently from the way we do ordinarily. Yeah?
It's just a thought, because I actually just started journaling some of the dreams recently, and the thought of unlocking a key in which it allows a spontaneous connection to continue the story from my subconscious is like an offering to something. To me, it's just like really feels like it's a gift to be able to spontaneously write.
Yes.
The continuation of the story.
Mm-hmm.
And to do it perhaps in the spontaneous, non-thought, creative part of your brain is amazing.
Yes.
Started.
And when you use expressions like it's like an offering, see how she's using an image already. Mm-hmm. That brings us into the poetic realm. So thank you. That's a very important point. Someone in the back had a question? Yeah.
So I've just been playing a little bit with the difference between writing and writing versus writing on the piece of it.
Oh, right.
And the different kinds of feelings that each of them, how it's different, the process is different, and I'm wondering if you've had any, if you've played with that at all, have you noticed anything about that for yourself?
I noticed that I was able to train myself to be able to write just as creatively using the computer keyboard as with a pen.
How did you do that?
What you do is just continue to practice it, and gradually you forget about the fact that you're typing, because your focus has gone into the words, images, and feelings that you're working with, and you're just getting them out there onto the screen and looking at them. And it works the same way as if you were writing with a pen. So I don't think you have to worry about that. I mean, once you get into it, it just happens automatically.
It's just the instrumentality, like the musical instrument.
Like a musical instrument, yeah. Yes?
I'm wondering if you
give any credence to that idea that writing with our hand, in our own handwriting, is some sort of neurological, brings out some sort of connection to ourself on paper. We're seeing our handwriting reflected, and we're having neurons work at the actual writing process. So, I mean, I've been kind of interested in whether it is more connecting to write by hand or
I'm not very knowledgeable about that, but it certainly makes sense. In other words, you're saying something happens in your brain when you look at your actual handwriting, which does have a unique look as opposed to the letters on the screen, which are all the same for everybody.
And something happens in your brain, even the act of handwriting.
Okay, that's a good thing to, yeah.
That the brain doesn't have that same area activated when it's on.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Good. No, I'm glad you brought that up, and it does make sense. So she's saying there might be another advantage to the writing longhand. You can certainly write your first draft longhand, and then you can start typing.
I've noticed two things along that line. One is that I agree with you, at least for myself, my own writing. I compose on the computer as frequently as I do longhand, or more so.
Mm-hmm.
But also, what Kaylee said, I sometimes, when I'm writing longhand, will say, gosh, that looks like my grandmother's handwriting, or my dad's handwriting, or my mom's. And I'll say, oh, what's up? So I just, you know, I'm getting a different slant on where something's from, and I can't see that on the computer screen. I might notice it in the language, but when it's in handwriting, it's really obvious.
These are really good comments. Yeah.
I loved when you were talking about Yeats's poem and and what he was accomplishing with that was making me think about being in the stuck places that the sort of left brain kind of rational part wants to fix or come to a resolution. But sometimes you end up in a stuck place that there you have to just sit with it for a while, and it's really hard to do.
Yes.
It seems like, I mean, the way, when you were talking about that, what occurred to me was that poetry is an excellent tool for letting unknown material come out to help us metabolize the stuckness, like kind of to, or like in his situation, there was nothing he could really do with his love since she was rejecting him. He
right.
Really come to any resolution in the outer world.
Yes.
But he came to resolution inside and like bringing it into the transpersonal realm of the mountain, the stars.
Yes.
Like,
very good point.
Seemed to bring redemption or some sort of metabolized, you know, resolution that was really impossible to kind of fix it in the outer world way.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems really exciting to me that that's a way to, when we're stuck in those places where it's like that painful, like, I want to do something, but there's absolutely nothing to do but sit in it, that the poetry can help us sort of let some, you know, transcendent things come to.
So you're saying it helps you move out of the stuckness when you start putting it in writing. Yes, I've definitely found that. Other people have found that too, right? Because that moving along is already moving out of the stuckness. And also you brought up that in the poem by Yeats, he's completing something that can't be completed in actual life. By putting it there and having it as a completed sonnet, it's another form of completion that can't happen in reality. And so, I finally found a way to bring some completion, at least for today. Because here I put it this way. And when I connected it to the stars, I took it out of my own control and just trusted that, well, there are other forces at work here.
I was fortunate enough to have gone to a storytelling workshop with Nancy Mellon. I don't know if you know her. She's a wonderful healing art storyteller.
And one of the practices we did there also was to have started a fairy tale and to have finished the fairy tale for somebody else, actually, who started off the story. And it was a very beautiful combination of imaginative ways of working through something. It feels like it's the same thing, but you're working on your own. And I see this perhaps even helping in the healthcare setting, because I work as a nurse, and where storytelling is becoming more and more sort of a part of maybe how we dialogue with the people we're working with. And maybe in the form of poetry, even if it's not done in the hospital setting, but maybe after or before.
Yes, very much so.
Sort of possibilities.
Yeah, and there's even such a thing as poetry therapy now that's used in mental health settings and even hospitals. Something about putting it in a poem that helps you move it, move the experience, just like what you were saying. Yeah?
I'm sort of raising my hand, but I wasn't quite sure. When it was brought up about writing by hand, I realized that when I'm doing it with my pen and my notebook, that it's kind of, it's like an act. It's enacting a love affair with the moment, really. And there's kind of like a matchmaking going on. Like you're matching words. You're bringing words together in ways which hopefully will make them happy with each other.
Yes.
But sometimes we bring words together in ways that they just don't last.
Good point.
But there is a matchmaking going on.
Good. I like that way of putting it. So when you heard the poem by Yeats, which is about the experience of loving someone who does not love you in the same way that you love her or him, could everybody relate to that as a theme that happened in your own life? Okay. So when you heard the poem, you heard somebody else who had the same experience you did, and you found out about his way of working with it, of handling it, of expressing it. This is how we help each other. And so, in effect, you read that poem because you heard it recited. So that's the equivalent of reading it. And of course, poems are meant to be recited, spoken aloud. And you heard something in the poem that actually helped you, even though it was from his story. This is an extremely important point in the other half of our topic, because half of the topic is how to write poetry, the other half is how to read poetry. You can gain a lot from reading poems by people who've been through the same experience you have. And since we're all human, most of the experiences that other people have had, we've had too. And we find out something about ourselves when we hear their way of expressing it. Does this make sense to everybody?
Mm-hmm.
So take this poem by Emily Dickinson. And see if, as you hear it, and it's very easy to understand, you can relate to what she's describing as something personal to you. A great hope fell. You heard no noise. The ruin was within. Oh, cunning wreck that told no tale and let no witness in, a not admitting of the wound until it grew so wide that all my life had entered it. and there was room beside. So, can you relate to that experience? We know what that's about. Yet she puts it in a way that has a certain rhythm, that has rhyme, it draws us in, and it somehow makes the experience not so horrible. Because you can somehow appreciate it, you can see the artistry, the beauty in it, and that in itself has some healing power. So if I were to say, just use one sentence in prose and say, sometimes we cover things up and then we find ourselves pretty messed up. Well, I said the same thing she said, but it doesn't quite come through in the same powerful way, because I'm not cherishing and molding the experience within words and rhythms that upgrade it and make it an existential human shared experience. Mm-hmm. I'm just trivializing it, summarizing it too facilely. So I'm not really appreciating the power of it. So this is what the poetry does. It helps us appreciate the power. Does this make sense to everybody? Good. Well, other questions about this? Yeah.
I have the good fortune of running women's circles.
Mm-hmm.
And I love poetry, so I've brought poetry in. And I have them write poetry, or write wherever it goes, and it always is poetry. And what's very wonderful is they speak from the collective. That's what poetry is, which speaks from the divine, mm-hmm. which is what the circle is holding. And it's just been amazing, some of the women, what they have written. I'm just there in awe.
And written spontaneously.
Spontaneously. And sometimes I'll start them off with just a few words and just say, just go wherever it goes and come back when you need to. And there'll be a different theme for my circles every month. So it's just wonderful. And I experiment in other ways. And then the other thing is I do grief support groups for hospice.
Mm.
And I bring poetry in. It has a setup, but I bring poetry in, and it is so healing. And a lot of the people ask for copies of it, because that's what they're needing with open hearts that are so raw, is bringing that in.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third thing is, I was hospitalized at UCSF recently.
Mm-hmm.
And I was on a brand newly renovated floor. And I had to do the laps after surgery. I had to do the laps. They had beautiful pictures, but they had poetry. Mm. They had amazing poetry that I could read as I stopped at different
Good.
Stations.
Yeah.
And so you mentioned before about the healing. I just thought that was brilliant.
Yes. It really contributes. Good. Thank you. Somebody else had a... Yes.
And then. Just a couple of questions. One, if you... This is on the practical side. If you have any tips for really learning how to more easily memorize poems or recite them, because I find it... at times challenging to keep it in my brain when I'm sometimes wanting it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second question is has to do with if you're wanting to use poetry to heal the Spirit and share this healing with others. Do you ever have any concerns about maybe some of the poetry that is a product of our culture being sort of a reflection of the confusion and the lost feelings of our culture?
Yes, it's always going to reflect what's going on, and that's why it's a wonderful record of what people are going through in each generation. As far as the memorizing, I think it's best, just if you really love a particular poem, just to read it over and over, and gradually you'll get to know it, rather than sit and memorize it the way you memorize lines for a play. It works a lot better when you just keep repeating it, and then it just goes in more naturally.
Yeah, I've got all kinds of stuff rolling around in my head. I'm not sure what to spit out. But when you just recited the poem that you did, and then you paraphrased it in prose form, it was like such a difference. It was like...
Yeah, kind of loses all its color.
Like, wow, why did we even bother to write that way? You know, it's like telling the story rather than eating the story or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the kind of feeling. It was just like so.
Well, it shows you the power of the poetic form.
Yeah, and I've, you know, it took me a long time to call myself a writer. I've never been able to call myself a poet, but I've been in a writer's group with poets, and I'm in awe of this poetry thing. I have a couple poems that come through me. I don't say I wrote them. I say they came and I put them on the page.
That's an inspiration.
That's how poetry shows up to me.
Good.
Who's talking? But I'll write down what you're saying. But they don't. But that doesn't happen. It's only happened, like, I've been writing for many years, but that's only happened a couple times in my life. And it feels like an experience of the divine or something.
That's the nature of inspiration, when
and
it just comes through.
And that is just sweet when that happens.
Yes.
I want that to happen some more.
Well, we can't control it. We can't make it happen. But everybody has that wonderful experience of something suddenly coming through.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Don't you think, though, that the odds are, if you are doing that more and you're making a practice, you know, more like people do your,
you'll be more open to it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Just thinking.
Yes, definitely. Somebody in the backers. Yes.
Can you speak a little bit about the relationship between writing poetry and meditation practice?
Yes. I start out with explaining how to bring mindfulness into this. What I'm proposing is a combination of mindfulness and imagination. Because in mindfulness, you go to your present moment here and now and just live with whatever your reality is. So we start that way. Then we let our imagination go, and that's when we open to all the images and feelings that want to come through. So it's a combination of the two. Just mindfulness would not bring in the imagination. Just imagination might be too scattered. So the mindfulness anchors it. Mm-hmm. Did you have a comment?
I was going to ask, if you know the poem that would just address the last two questions over here. I don't know this. Neruda talks about the first spare line, full of foolishness. Ending in the heavens unfastened and open.
Oh, you mean about writing a poem?
Yeah.
And it begins with what?
La Poesia is the name of the poem, I think.
Yeah, and it's what? It starts with...
I don't remember. I think that what I was remembering was pulled out of the middle of it. But the entering into that space of just pure foolishness and not knowing where
yes.
you're going. And then it reveals itself to you.
That's a very good point. One of the things that's helped me is this idea of just write it any old way at first and then work with it. Don't try to write perfectly right from the beginning. Good. Well, we're going to start winding up, and I'm going to stay after and do some book signing, or if you want to say hello. But I do want to end with, first of all, thanking you for your attention, and this seems like a really enthusiastic group for poetry, so I'm hoping that this will get you writing. And I'd like to end with my own poem to the Virgin Mary, and I wanted to include it in here because it just kind of came through naturally as a kind of prayer. Bursting Virgin, expect me. Mother most brooding, hatch me in time. Nurse of the pearl way, press me to your breasts. Madonna of evening tenderness, hold me with both hands. Mistress of hearths, my shelter be. Escort of journeys, accompany me. Woman of mystery, make sense of me. Lady of light, see through me, see me through. Dame of the dark, clutch me in my abyss. Grandmother of sorrows, grieve with me. Queen of swords, slash me, scatter me. Rose of thorns, bud me, bloom. Maiden of meaning, deeply involve me. Bride of Shiva, wholly dissolve me. Goddess of sun and snow, chant in me your seasons. Full of grace, you and I, now and at the hour. So thank you all.